Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi, Herman and Corin. So the annals of scientific history are full of fantastic inventors whose inventions were not well received or even acknowledged during their lifetime. And some of the inventions that they created are things that you'd think were pretty straightforward, which didn't have such a intriguing history. One of the great things for modern parents is the pacifier, which is great at soothing screaming children and for breastfeeding mothers provides some relief. And you wouldn't really think that the pacifier has such a colorful history as it does. I remember looking it up. The things that humans have turned to for pacifiers throughout history is actually pretty interesting. There have been some very, very strange contraptions used. And I believe in Germany at one point, there was a popular type of pacifier that had the defect that it was strapped to the infant's head, but it could fall in and choke them. So some babies died because of that. So we have come a long way in the pacifier. But there was a very interesting guy in New York called Christian Menick, a druggist from Manhattan, who I'm just reading from a site here, in 1901, applied for a patent for a new and original design for a baby comforter. And it goes on to say that the medical community wasn't exactly jumping up and down in celebration at this device, even though it was effective. And in fact, there was a huge amount of resistance, people alleging that it was unhygienic. And this stuff is kind of really interesting because when you think about a time when physicians recommended smoking, it wasn't all that long ago in history. So I'd love to get into the history of pacifiers, but also this invention, because I think it may be one of those things we take for granted, but it is interesting in the sense that it's precedent for this idea that sometimes when people do come up with genuinely good ideas, it's very hard to dislodge scientific consensus. And in this case, it wasn't even like the doctors, from what I read, had such fantastic evidence. It was just they didn't like the idea. They thought it was kind of gross. And that created these strange social stigmas even around the use of pacifiers, that it was thought of as something unclean. The much bigger picture is that not only has that science been debunked, but later science has come to affirm the use of pacifiers as actually the opposite, healthy. And they've been linked to, I believe, this is what Hannah's research dug up, and I think she's correct, a reduction in the rate of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. So Herman and Corin, let's take a moment to think about the inventors in history, but specifically this invention that at their time was often received with some hostility and later came to be embraced. Let's talk about the history of the pacifier in today's episode of My Weird Prompts.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am joined as always by my brother, the man who probably has a research paper on his nightstand for every possible household object. Herman, how are we doing today?
Herman Poppleberry, reporting for duty. And you are not wrong, Corn, although, to be fair, the research papers are usually on my tablet these days. Much easier to organize, and I can search for keywords like polypropylene or historical dental hygiene while I am eating my cereal. It is much more efficient.
Efficiency is your middle name, Herman. Well, that and Poppleberry. So, our housemate Daniel sent us a fascinating audio prompt this morning. He was asking about something most of us probably haven't thought about since we were, well, toddlers. He wants to dig into the history of the pacifier.
It is such a great topic because it is one of those things that seems so simple, right? It is just a piece of silicone or rubber that keeps a baby quiet. But the social and medical history behind it is absolutely wild. It was a point of massive controversy for decades. We are talking about a device that was once blamed for everything from moral decay to facial deformities.
Yeah. Daniel specifically mentioned Christian Meinecke, spelled M-E-I-N-E-C-K-E, the Manhattan druggist who patented a design in 1901, and he asked about the resistance from the medical community. I mean, it is hard to imagine a doctor today getting angry about a pacifier, but apparently, back in the early 20th century, it was a different story. It was practically a war.
Oh, they were livid, Korn. We are talking about a full-on moral and medical crusade against the pacifier. But before we get to Meineke and the 1900s, we should probably set the stage for what parents were doing before that. Because humans have been trying to soothe crying babies since the dawn of time, and the methods they used were, well, let us just say they were creative, if not a bit terrifying.
Right, because the instinct to suck is one of the most basic human reflexes. It is not just about hunger. It is about self-regulation. It is how infants process the overwhelming world around them. So, what did the prehistoric pacifier look like? I am picturing a very smooth rock, or maybe a piece of wood.
You are not far off. Archaeological digs have found clay objects from as far back as 3,000 years ago, specifically in places like Cyprus and Italy that look like small animals, like pigs or frogs, with a hole where you could put honey or sugar. These were essentially the first soothers. They were small enough for a baby to hold and suck on.
A clay pig filled with honey. That sounds like a recipe for a very sticky baby and a lot of broken pottery.
Exactly. And for the wealthy in the 17th and 18th centuries, they had what were called corals. These were pieces of polished red coral, often set in silver or gold handles, sometimes with little bells attached. The coral was hard and cool, which was great for teething, and the bells were supposed to ward off evil spirits. It was a high-status item. If you saw a baby with a silver-mounted coral, you knew that family had money.
So the pacifier has always been a bit of a status symbol. That is interesting. But what about everyone else? The people who couldn't afford silver-mounted coral?
For most of history, the common person used what were called sugar tits or sugar rags. And yes, the name is exactly as crude as it sounds.
It really is. I feel like I need to apologize to our listeners just for saying it.
It was a very descriptive era. Basically, you would take a small piece of linen or old rag, put a lump of sugar or a piece of bread soaked in honey or even animal fat inside it, tie it off with a string, and let the baby suck on it. Sometimes, if the baby was really fussy or teething, they would dip the whole thing in brandy, gin, or laudanum.
Laudanum? As in liquid opium? Wow. So, 19th century parenting was essentially just mild sedation. Here you go, tiny human. Have some sugar and some narcotics.
In many cases, yes. There was a very popular product called Godfrey's Cordial, which was also known as Mother's Friend. It was a mixture of opium, molasses, and water. It was incredibly dangerous, obviously. Not just because of the risk of overdose or addiction, but because those rags were rarely washed. They were breeding grounds for bacteria, and they were often reused until they were literally falling apart.
Which makes sense why the medical community started to get nervous. If you are a doctor in the late 1800s and you see a baby sucking on a piece of old, sugary cloth that has been sitting on a dusty floor and is covered in flies, you are going to have concerns. It is a miracle anyone survived infancy back then.
It really is. And that is the environment Christian Meineke was looking at in 1901. He was a druggist in Manhattan, and he saw a gap in the market. There were teething rings made of bone or ivory or even lead, which is terrifying to think about now. But there wasn't a dedicated, mass-produced soothing device that was easy to clean. He patented what he called a baby comforter.
I like that name much better than the rag alternative. It sounds much more professional. The Meineke Baby Comforter.
Definitely a branding upgrade. His design, patent number 671,300, was the first to really look like the modern pacifier. It had a soft rubber nipple attached to a hard shield. The shield was the key innovation because it prevented the baby from swallowing or choking on the nipple. It was marketed as a hygienic alternative to the old rags. He even used a specific type of rubber that was supposed to be pure.
So, you would think the medical community would be happy about this, right? It is a manufactured, presumably cleaner version of what people were already doing. It solves the choking hazard and the old rag problem. But Daniel mentioned there was actually a huge amount of resistance. Why was that? Why did they hate the comforter?
It was a perfect storm of medical theory, classism, and a very specific, very rigid philosophy of child-rearing. First, you have to remember that germ theory was still relatively new. Doctors were becoming obsessed with hygiene, which was a good thing, but they applied it very rigidly. They called the pacifier a germ trap. They argued that because it was constantly in and out of the baby's mouth and falling on the floor, it was a primary vector for disease, specifically summer diarrhea, which was a leading cause of infant mortality at the time.
I mean, they weren't entirely wrong about the floor, Bart. Even today, the 5-second rule is a bit of a gamble with the pacifier. I've seen parents do the quick lick to clean it, which I assume doctors back then would have hated even more.
Oh, they would have had a stroke, but they took it to an extreme. There was this famous pediatrician in the early 20th century, Dr. Frederick Truby King. He was a huge figure in New Zealand and the United Kingdom, and his influence spread to the United States through his Plunkett Society. He hated pacifiers with a passion. He called them a soul-destroying habit.
Soul-destroying? Herman, that seems a bit dramatic for a piece of rubber. Did he think the baby was selling their soul to the rubber industry?
He believed that a child's character was formed in infancy through discipline and routine. He preached that babies should be fed on a strict 4-hour schedule and that they should never be picked up when they cried. To him, a pacifier was a way of cheating, the routine. It was seen as a sign of a lazy mother who didn't have the discipline to let her child learn self-control. He actually wrote that the pacifier was the most common cause of the destruction of the peace and happiness of the home.
Wow. So it was a moral judgment as much as a medical one. It was basically, if you use this, you are a bad parent and your child will grow up to be a weak-willed person.
Exactly. And it became a massive class issue. The middle and upper classes, who could afford to follow these strict, labor-intensive parenting philosophies, and who often had help, looked down on the working-class mothers who used pacifiers. If you were a mother working in a factory or running a busy household without help, you needed that baby to be quiet so you could get things done. So, the pacifier became a marker of the lower class. It was seen as vulgar and common.
It is interesting how often medical advice is actually just thinly veiled social commentary. Don't do this thing that poor people do because it makes you look poor. But what about the physical arguments? I remember hearing that pacifiers would ruin a baby's teeth or change the shape of their jaw. Was that part of the resistance back then, too?
Absolutely. That was one of the biggest talking points. They called it the pacifier face. Doctors claimed it would lead to a narrowing of the palate, protruding teeth, and even adenoid problems. They argued that constant sucking would deform the soft bones of the face, leading to a vacant expression. They even blamed it for causing mouth breathing, which they thought led to lower intelligence.
A vacant expression. They were really pulling out all the stops to scare parents. Is there any truth to that, though? Does it actually change your face?
To some extent, yes, but only if the habit continues into childhood. For an infant, the bones are very pliable, but they also bounce back. Most modern orthodontists will tell you that if a child stops using a pacifier by age 2 or 3, there is usually no permanent damage. But back then, they were telling parents that even a few months of use would permanently disfigure their child and ruin their chances of a good marriage or a successful career. It was intense.
That is a lot of pressure to put on a parent who just wants 10 minutes of peace to drink a cup of coffee. So, how did we get from soul-destroying germ traps to the modern day where they are handed out in hospitals? What changed the narrative? Was there some kind of big pacifier lobby?
It was a gradual shift that started around the 1940s and 50s. A few things happened. First, the material science improved. We moved from natural rubber, which could have impurities, a strong sulfur smell, and was prone to rotting to high-quality latex, and eventually medical-grade silicone. This made them much easier to sterilize and much safer for the baby.
And I imagine the parenting philosophy shifted too. We moved away from the let them cry it out or they will become a criminal approach.
Right. After World War II, you have the rise of people like Dr. Benjamin Spock. His book, The Common Sense Book of Baby and Child Care, published in 1946, was a revolution. He moved away from the rigid, disciplinary style of Truby King and toward a more responsive, child-centered approach. He argued that if a baby has a strong sucking instinct, it is better to satisfy it with a pacifier than to let them become distressed or start sucking their thumb.
Oh, that is a good point. A pacifier is something a parent can eventually take away. You can't really take away a thumb unless you are very committed to some very questionable parenting techniques.
Precisely. That was a huge realization for the medical community. Thumb-sucking is a much harder habit to break and can cause more significant dental issues, what they call malocclusion, because the thumb is harder and more rigid than a pacifier nipple. So suddenly, the pacifier was the lesser of two evils. It was a tool for management rather than a sign of moral failure.
But the real game changer, the thing Daniel mentioned in his prompt, was the link to SIDS, or Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. That seems like a much more recent development. How did we go from this might kill your baby with germs to this might save your baby's life?
It is one of the most fascinating turnarounds in medical history. The research really started to solidify in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Several large-scale studies, including a major one published in the British Medical Journal, found a significant correlation between pacifier use during sleep and a reduced risk of SIDS.
Do we know why? What is the mechanism there? Is it just that they can't roll over on their face if they have a piece of plastic sticking out?
There are a few theories. One is purely mechanical. Having a pacifier in the mouth helps keep the airway open. It prevents the tongue from falling back and obstructing breathing. Another theory is about the depth of sleep. Babies who use pacifiers tend to sleep a bit more lightly. They don't fall into that incredibly deep, unresponsive sleep where they might stop breathing and not be able to rouse themselves. It keeps the brain just active enough to maintain the respiratory drive.
That is fascinating. So the very thing the old doctors hated, the fact that it kept the baby stimulated and cheated, the deep sleep routine is actually what makes it life-saving.
Exactly. It also encourages the development of the pathways in the brain that control the upper airway. It is essentially a form of neurological exercise for the breathing muscles. In 2005, the American Academy of Pediatrics officially changed its recommendation and began suggesting that parents offer a pacifier at nap time and bedtime for the first year of life. It was a complete 180-degree turn.
From being a germ trap that destroys the soul to a recommended medical device for preventing infant death. That is a wild arc for Christian Meinecke's little invention. Speaking of Meinecke, did he actually make a lot of money from this, or was he buried by the medical opposition?
He actually did quite well. Despite the doctor's protests, parents loved the product. It was cheap, it worked, and it was a lot better than the homemade alternatives. By the 1920s, pacifiers were being sold in drugstores across the country. Meinecke's design was the foundation for companies like Binky, which became a household name, and eventually the more modern ergonomic designs we see today.
It is funny how the market often moves faster than the experts. Parents knew it was helpful long before the doctors were willing to admit it. They were the ones in the trenches at 3 a.m.
That is a recurring theme in the history of medicine, corn, especially when it comes to childcare. Parents are on the front lines, and they are looking for practical solutions to immediate problems. The experts are often looking through the lens of their own cultural biases or theoretical frameworks that don't always survive contact with a screaming infant.
You mentioned ergonomic designs. I'm curious about the difference between a standard nipple and those flat, orthodontic ones. Was that a big leap forward or just more marketing?
It was a significant leap. That happened in the 1950s. Two German doctors, Wilhelm Balters and Adolf Müller, realized that standard round nipples didn't actually mimic the shape of a mother's breast during breastfeeding. When a baby latches, the nipple is flattened against the palate.
Oh, interesting. So the round ones are actually less natural than the flat ones.
Exactly. So they developed the NUK brand, which stands for Natürlich und Kiefergerecht, which basically means natural and orthodontic. The flat bottom and rounded top are designed to allow the tongue to move naturally and to put less pressure on the developing jaw. That was the first time the medical community really got involved in the design process to address those dental concerns we talked about earlier. It was a move toward making the pacifier a precision medical tool.
So, we have gone from sugar rags to rubber shields to scientifically designed orthodontic tools. It is a pretty impressive evolution for such a small object. What is next? Are we going to have AI-powered pacifiers?
We are already there, Korn. It is February of 2026, and smart pacifiers are becoming more common in clinical settings. There are devices now that can monitor a baby's temperature, their oxygen saturation, and even check their electrolyte levels through their saliva.
Wait, really? A pacifier that does blood work?
Essentially, yes. They are mostly used in neonatal intensive care units, the NICU right now. It helps doctors monitor the health of premature babies without having to constantly draw blood or disturb them with sensors. There is even research into using pacifiers to help train premature babies how to suck and swallow, which is a vital skill they need before they can go home. It is called the NTOSS system, Non-Nutritive Suck Assessment and Training.
That is incredible. It is a long way from a Manhattan druggist in 1901. It has gone from a comforter to a life-saving diagnostic tool.
It really is. And it is a great reminder that even the most mundane things in our lives, the things we step on in the middle of the night or find under the couch cushions, often have these deep, complex histories filled with controversy, class warfare, and scientific breakthroughs.
Definitely. I think the takeaway here is that the pacifier isn't just a silencer. It is a medical tool, a social marker, and a piece of engineering that has saved countless lives. And it is also a reminder that today's medical certainty might be tomorrow's weird history.
Well said, Korn. It is a testament to human ingenuity and our eternal, desperate desire for a good night's sleep.
Amen to that. Well, I think we have covered a lot of ground today. We have looked at the dangerous sugar rags of the past, the bold innovation of Christian Meinecke, the intense medical backlash of the early 20th century, and the eventual redemption of the pacifier through modern science.
It is a wild ride, and if any of our listeners are parents, hopefully this gives you a little more confidence next time you reach for that pacifier. You are not being lazy. You are using a scientifically backed safety device that has been 3,000 years in the making.
Exactly. And hey, if you've been enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or over on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and keeps us going. We are a small operation, and every 5-star review is like a little shot of caffeine for Herman's research brain.
It really does help. We love seeing your feedback and hearing your own weird prompts.
You can find all our past episodes, including our deep dives into other weird inventions, at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We have an RSS feed there and a contact form if you want to send us a topic like our friend Daniel did today.
Thanks again to Daniel for the prompt. This was a fun one to research. I might actually keep my old pacifier research papers on the nightstand for one more night.
Just don't try to use one, Herman. I think you are a few decades past the age limit. This has been My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry.
We will see you next time.
Until then, stay curious.
So, Herman, I have to ask, do you remember having a pacifier? Or were you one of those babies who just read the encyclopedia instead? I feel like you were born with a pair of glasses and a very small fountain pen.
Very funny. Actually, my mother tells me I was a thumbsucker. I was very committed to it. I apparently had a very specific technique that involved my index finger as well. It was quite a complex operation.
So you were the rebel, fighting against the orthodontic establishment from day one. You were a Truby King nightmare.
Apparently so. I think I just liked having a built-in soothing mechanism. No assembly required, and I couldn't drop it on the floor. It was the most efficient option available to me at the time.
That makes sense. I think I had one of those classic yellow rubber ones. I have seen pictures. I look like I was trying to win a bubblegum blowing contest. I had a very round face, so the pacifier face warning would have really scared my parents.
Well, you always were ambitious. And your face turned out just fine, Korn. Mostly.
Mostly. I will take it. But seriously, the SIDS connection is what really sticks with me. It is amazing how something so small can have such a massive impact on public health. It is a reminder that sometimes the simplest solutions are the most effective.
It really is. It is one of those rare cases where a simple behavior change, just offering a pacifier, can move the needle on a global scale. It is right up there with the Back to Sleep campaign in terms of impact.
Right. The Back to Sleep campaign, which, if I remember correctly, happened around the same time the pacifier research was coming out in the 90s.
Exactly. The 1990s were a huge decade for infant safety. We learned more in those 10 years about the physiology of infant sleep than we had in the previous 100. It was a golden age of pediatric research.
It makes you wonder what else we are currently doing that will seem completely wrong 50 years from now. Maybe in 2076, people will listen to a podcast about how we used to let babies sleep in rooms without AI atmospheric monitoring.
Oh, I am sure there is a long list. That is the beauty of science, though. It is self-correcting. We learn, we adapt, and we improve. We move from sugar rags to smart sensors.
Well, on that note, I think we should wrap it up. I need to go see if Daniel has any more audio prompts waiting for us. He is probably researching the history of the toaster, or something equally obscure.
He usually does. The man has a never-ending supply of curiosity. It is a bit exhausting, to be honest.
We're lucky to have him as a housemate. Alright everyone, thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. We will be back soon with another deep dive into the strange history of the things you use every day.
Take care, everyone. Keep your airways open and your curiosity active.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.
You know, Herman, I was just thinking about the classism aspect again. It is wild how long that stigma lasted. I remember seeing old movies from the 50s where only the tough kids or the kids from the wrong side of the tracks had pacifiers.
Oh, absolutely. It was a very effective way of signaling status in media. If your baby was quiet without a pacifier, it meant you were a better parent with a better child. It is the same kind of shaming we see today with things like screen time or certain types of plastic toys. The targets change, but the social hierarchy remains.
Yeah, the targets change, but the judgment remains the same. It is always about finding a way to feel superior to other parents.
Sadly, yes. But at least now we have the data to push back against it. Science is the great equalizer, or at least it should be.
True. Data doesn't care about your social standing.
Most of the time, anyway.
All right, for real this time, we are out. See you guys.
See ya.
One last thing, Herman. Did you ever find out why they called them pacifiers instead of comforters in the end? I feel like comforter is much more snuggly.
Actually, pacifier became the dominant term in the United States, while dummy took over in the United Kingdom and Australia, and soother in Canada. It is just one of those regional linguistic shifts. Pacifier comes from the Latin pacificare, which means to make peace.
To make peace. I like that. It is a very accurate description of what happens when you give one to a screaming infant. It is the ultimate peace treaty.
It really is. The smallest, most effective peace treaty in history.
Agreed. Okay, now we are definitely done.
Agreed.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com.
And on Spotify. Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.